podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to 1865, the Nottingham Forest podcast with me, Rich Ferraro. And today we've got a bit of a doubleheader for you. We've got a report on Forest's extra time win away at Blackpool in the FA Cup. And then we will be bringing you your Friday Five, the top five stories coming out of the City Ground this week. So starting off with the Forest versus Blackpool match. And as you will probably know by now, and most of you may even have watched it, Forest needed extra time to get past Blackpool in the FA Cup. In a reversal of the match at the City Ground, it was Forest who took a two-goal lead before the home team came back. And then, despite a scare right at the death, Forest managed to take it to extra time where they got the winning goal through Chris Wood. George, you were at the match. First of all, have you thawed out yet?
I was fine. I took a heated gilet or my mum's heated gilet. I borrowed that. So I was nice and toasty, but my granddad forgot to bring his coat. So that made it a memorable afternoon. So we had a quick scurry up to Sainsbury's to get a replacement. But yeah, only just now. Got in at 2:30 to a double duvet. And that's just what I needed once I got home.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that you and granddad were both okay in what must have been a perishingly cold night. And of course, there was a danger that the match was actually going to get called off at one point, which probably had you nervously checking your phone on the way up. Let's just have a look at the Forest team. So we had Odysseus in goal, a back four of Nico Williams at right back and Nuno Tavares at left back, with Murillo partnered by Andrew Omobamadeli for the first time in a Forest shirt. In midfield, we had Aurel Mangala and Danilo with Ryan Yates as well, playing slightly further forward from those two. And then we had Nico Dominguez and Callum Hudson-Odoi flanking Chris Wood. And I think it's fair to say, George, that Forest were more or less in control until they weren't.
Yeah, well, they were in control for much of the first half, I suppose, weren't they? I mean, they started off, Blackpool came up for it straight away. They penned them in, didn't give them any space in the first 5 minutes. And that was probably always going to happen. You know, Blackpool, they were unbeaten at home or won the last seven games, I think, at home. So they were probably keen to show Forest, you know, that it wouldn't be an easy task for them. So Forest did well to sort of weather that storm. And then they obviously sort of started to grow into the game. But I think with the formation, like you mentioned, with sort of the four midfield players, there was a lot of wondering what formation it would be, who would be sort of sitting. And Mangala was sort of the number six. And then it was sort of Danilo, Dominguez and Yates all in that sort of centre mid slash right mid slash cam role and sort of interchanging. And it didn't really look that balanced, but Forest sort of made it work throughout the first half. Blackpool didn't cause them that many issues apart from a few sort of distance strikes. But Forest themselves didn't really look that threatening going forward. And it had to be a few set-piece chances and ultimately a goal from Omobamadeli that made Forest take the lead. Because apart from, I don't want to be negative, we've won, we've gone through, I'm happy we've gone through and bring on Bristol City. But in terms of, especially in the first half, they didn't really create that many chances in terms of through their good play. So set-pieces often have to be the saving grace, and they were for Forest. And that's a couple of set-pieces now since the set-piece coaches came in as a nicely worked corner. And actually, throughout the game, Forest tried this sort of out-swinging corner. You know, from the right, it would be Dominguez, from the left, Tavares. And often, for the last few years, it's been the in-swingers. But Forest has clearly got this new ploy. So I think Murillo missed a header after about 10 minutes from a corner from the left. And then it was about 15 minutes on the clock that Forest did take the lead. Nicely worked corner from Dominguez into the near post, knocked on by Ryan Yates into a decent area. And I think all the Blackpool players were ball watching or trying to play Forest offside. And they didn't see Omobamadeli at the back post. And he was there on his debut to tap home. A family of Forest fans, I'm sure he enjoyed that.
And Stephen, you're here as well. And like me, you were watching on the television. So just going back to the point that that George just made there. So, yes, they needed the set piece to get their goal. One thing that was interesting to me is I could clearly hear the Forest fans singing, "If Yatesy scores, we're in the sea." And then Yatesy got the header, which promptly didn't go anywhere near the goal, but it did essentially flick it on so that Omobamadeli had the freedom of the coast to tap in. But it was a composed finish as well, wasn't it, Stephen?
Yeah, he took it well. It's very easy in a situation like that to panic or throw a foot at the ball and lose your composure. But he kept control of it with a nice finish. And yeah, I was really pleased for him to get on the score sheet. And as George was saying, it's now a couple of set piece goals that we've had recently. And when you have a game like that last night, where we weren't playing particularly well and not being too effective in terms of our open play, having those set pieces up your sleeve is a real bonus, and it can get you out of a hole. And I think it did for us last night.
And just to skip forward, so it was 1-0 at half time, and George, it was 2-0 very, very soon after the restart, because Forest did what we, you know, it's always nice to see it happen. Doesn't seem to happen often enough. They pressed the defending team straight away from the kickoff and took the lead after 28 seconds.
Yeah, it was a fabulous start to the second half, and just what Forest needed the space, because Bradford would have been hoping to have a similar start to what they did at the first, getting Forest faces and kicking towards their more vocal fans, try and get another goal back. But yeah, nicely pressed from Forest. I think it was Albin Morgan, who, one of their best players in form, he obviously scored later on in the game, but he sold the goalkeeper short, and then Dominguez went in there for that challenge, as he was always going to do, and he was always favourite to get it in the box with the goalkeeper challenging for it as well. So he squares it across. Danilo is there scampering in the middle, and a nice bit of composure from Danilo. He's often a bit rash, but instead of just lashing it first time, he took a few little touches and then hit it in towards the corner. I'm not sure if it was on target or not, but it did in the end deflect off Marvin Ekpeteta, it was, wasn't it? So yeah, nice for Danilo to get on the score sheet. It was a sort of rallying performance from him. He did fade throughout the game, but I mean, he loves scoring. It's brilliant to see him run away with that celebration. I don't know how to describe it, but I'll do it on the Zoom. And yeah, it was a brilliant moment, and you just thought, you know, Forest can now cruise into the fourth round of the cup, but it wasn't to be. But yeah, a perfect start to the second half, just what we needed. And yeah, well done Danilo.
And for our listeners' benefits there, George just did some pointy fingers. Stephen, at that point, were you thinking, all right, we're in control and cruising? Because the commentators on ITV certainly did, although they also initially said it was a really great finish by Danilo, and actually, it really wasn't. So,
I think if you've been following Forest for a while now, you'll know that Forest don't do cruising very well. And there was always a risk, I suppose, that if Blackpool got a goal by one means or another, the tails would be up and suddenly Forest were up against it. And that proved to be the case. And in fairness to Blackpool, they're going to throw bodies forward and try and get the ball into the box and make life difficult for Forest in that last 40 minutes or so. Because why not? You've got nothing to lose at 2-0 down. It proved to be effective for them. And as you see in these kind of cup ties, these pitches can be real levelers. It was a frozen pitch with snow piled up at the side, cold night by the coast. It all made for a very difficult evening for Forest, and so it proved to be in the end.
And Forest were pretty much in control for the first hour. Now, in the incident that led up to Forest getting the second goal, Blackpool's goalkeeper did get injured, Dan Grimshaw. And he came off just before the hour mark. And it was just that it's almost as if that kind of kick-started Blackpool into action, because for the first time, they exerted a little bit of pressure. And Forest just seemed to lose composure a little bit. And that's what led to Albie Morgan's goal. Now, everyone's going to point out, and rightly so, is a fabulous finish into the top corner. Really controlled finish as well. But, George, I'm just thinking to myself, all the goals so far, including the Forest goals and Albie Morgan's goal, came as a result of, well, frankly, defensive mistakes, I guess, or a lack of defensive composure. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, big time. Ryan Yates, unfortunately, the culprit this time. I actually watched the replays and I think they cut it off before this happened. But Yates has a chance to clear it on the edge of the box, and I think it was pretty sure it was on his right foot. But instead, he tries to sort of try and change over the play and play it to the left, allow it to come on his left foot. And by the time he's done that, Blackpool have pressed him, they've won the ball back, and then they eventually work it wide. Then the ball in is headed away pretty poorly, and because Forest have packed bodies into the box, it drops nicely for Morgan. And how he's hit that, he's sort of basically facing the sky doing a somersault, but somehow gets it into the top corner. I know he scored a very similar goal from distance at the weekend. Did they play Port Vale or something like that? I saw on the Championship highlights. It might have been Port Vale, I'll take that back. But yeah, he scored a similar goal like that. And for a neutral watching the game, obviously there'll be a lot on ITV4, it was actually a goal that was needed, because the game was sort of, it was a bit flat. Like you said, the goalkeeping change did have an impact on it. But suddenly after that, there was an atmosphere in the ground, there were substitutions everywhere, you know, and it really brought the game back into life. Obviously, from a Forest point of view, that's not what you want, because we were relatively comfortable and coasted into a fourth round tie against Bristol in 9 days. And you could see from when we conceded that goal that it was only going to go one way, especially with Forest and with them starting to struggle. I thought the two centre-backs, Murillo and Omobambadeli, were starting to struggle, particularly in the air. And obviously in the end, Warren and McKenna came on for that. But yeah, they were struggling. And I thought, especially in the first half, yes, it was his debut, and I don't want to be too harsh on him when he scored the goal, obviously, but Murillo was covering a lot of ground to cover for Omobambadeli's sort of positional naivety, maybe, and in the air he wasn't really that prominent. And I think in the end that told, because you can't be weak defensively against a League One outfit.
Well, yeah, and after they got back in the game, Blackpool did change basically their front three, and they went for a slightly more physical approach, and that paid dividends, because only a few minutes later, that thing that you said about being a little bit vulnerable in the air came to fruition. Stephen, the ball came in from the left-hand side. It was a bit of a hopeful ball. Now, again, the commentators were critical, firstly of Nuno Tavares and then Murillo. But that pretty much says all you need to know about the standard of commentary for this game. This is something we could have a whole separate conversation about. But ultimately, it was Odysseus, and for fans of Greek philosophy, you will be aware of the fact that he's had a long journey to get to Forest. But on this one, he earned his surname, which, as you pointed out in our group chat, Flapidemus.
Yes, it's... I really want things to go well for him, because I like the way he plays with his feet, and he seemed to have pedigree before he came to Forest, but we're just not seeing it. And this goal, it's like you say, it's a hopeful ball, but it comes right across the goal line. And at no point does he look like he either wants to claim it or looks capable of claiming
it. And he doesn't actually even flap at it. He just kind of watches it, doesn't he?
He just watches it go over his head. You can make a case maybe Murillo was pulled down, but I think that's just physical centre-forwards doing their job, really. Murillo's got to be stronger. But, yeah, just a goalkeeper's got to try and command in that situation and try and collect the ball, cover the line better, follow the ball, punch it away, do something. You can't just stand there and watch it going over your head, because that's where goals like that come from. Brilliant for Blackpool, but so avoidable and scrappy from our point of view.
I mean, the guy's 2 yards out. He's 2 yards out, right? The 6 yard box, like Stephen said, that is where goalkeepers have to command. Anything that comes into that area, you've got to get it. When the ball comes in, he's basically stood at the edge of his 6 yard box, like basically by the corner flag. And he's about 6'5". And the guy that heads it in is 2 yards out, and he was nowhere near it. And that, for a goalkeeper, is inexplicable. And I think it's sort of reassured everyone that Matt Turner is our number one. And for something like that to happen, you know that it's a big mistake as it's happened. So, yeah, he got nowhere
basically,
near that.
Basically, we need Turner's shot stopping and Odysseus's feet combined into one thing. And that's not actually doable, as far as I'm aware, not permitted. George, what was the mood like in the Forest end at that moment? Because I bet you're thinking, oh, God, here we go.
Yeah, well, I think, well, like I said, when the first goal went in, it was very predictable, because it's Forest, have all been there before. And with the atmosphere, the momentum, I mean, on the TV, I don't know if you could hear the Blackpool fans, but they were rocking as well, especially as the first goal went in. They were almost sucking that ball in, and we conceded with about 10 minutes to go. Somehow they added 10 minutes of added time as well. And yeah, it was a very long 20 minutes then until we got to the end. Forest obviously nearly threw it away in stoppage time as well. But yeah, there was no one was leaving in the away end, but I think many people were dreading that they would be leaving at 90 minutes, having lost the game, not won it.
Well, yes, and right at the death, it almost came to pass, didn't it? Because if we just skip right to the end of those 10 minutes of stoppage time, Dembele, the Blackpool substitute, got free, went around Odysseus, but he didn't quite have the courage of his convictions, did he? And Arel Mangala did a really good job of getting back and being on the line to cover his goalkeeper. But, I mean, that should have been curtains, shouldn't it, George?
It should have. And how that ball's been allowed to go through and no Forest players have reacted to it with the high line we were playing was really inexplicable. In fairness to Odysseus, I've just slabbered him. I get that. He did relatively well with that because he forced the player to go wide. He didn't sort of commit to going down that quickly. And I mean, had Mangala not been there, yeah, we would have conceded. So Mangala does have to take huge kudos for that. But yeah, I mean, given how the last 20 minutes went, Forest did rally. They had a few shots from sort of the edge of the box. But had Blackpool won it, I don't think they could be complaining. And I think extra time was something neither side would have wanted. So
Okay. Now, let's just skip to the end. I mean, this is just a brief report. So worth pointing out, there was a medical emergency in the Forest crowd. And in between the two periods of stoppage time, that did lead to a slight delay. Now, George, you were saying that it took a long time to get attention over there. And in the end, the fact that Andrew Omobamadeli went down injured just near where the fan was needing treatment actually maybe was what got the attention it needed, because he went down, obviously you know something was going on. You could see him on the camera waving to say, come here, there's someone, you know. But let's skip right to the end, because Forest did take the lead, and a lead that they managed to preserve this time. And actually, this is the only goal in the match where you'd say it wasn't entirely down to defensive mistakes. It was quite a nice goal. Although, from where you were sat, do you think there was a hint of offside when Ryan Yates got the ball to put it, when he drove it across the face of goal?
I did think there was a hint of offside, but I've not actually seen this back on the replay, but I thought it came off the Blackpool player and then deflected into Yates' path. Now, that might not have been what happened, but that's how I saw it. But yeah, Yates' driving, his passion, it really culminated there, because he gets to the ball on the byline, puts it across goal, and then Chris Wood's there to tap home. And that was the one good ball that Forrest put across into that area the whole game. And Chris Wood has been on the pitch for 90 minutes, plus the 10 minutes of stoppage time, plus the 15 minutes of extra time. And he's waiting for that one chance, and that one chance came, and he's there to stick it away. And that's what you need in your centre-forward. So brilliant centre-forward play. Wood was one of the positives, actually, of yesterday, because he didn't have much to feed on, but he won quite a lot of headers with no support from either winger. He kept going. And like I say, as a striker, you've got to be in them positions to score goals, and he always seems to be.
Yeah, and Stephen, just briefly, before we move on, I mean, I would also give plaudits to Dominguez and to Mangala, and Ryan Yates got ITV's man of the match. And I wouldn't argue that any of those didn't have good matches, but Nuno said afterwards, well, that's the nature of the FA Cup. He was kind of talking up. Neil Critchley was proud of his team and did, like I said, maybe there was a hint of offside. There's no VAR. And Critchley quite rightly pointed out it doesn't make sense to have VAR in one match and not the other. And I think that's a fair point. But just to sum up, really, I'm just thinking that at 60 minutes, as George said earlier, it's pretty dull, wasn't a very good spectacle. The remaining 60 minutes were a very good spectacle for the neutral. But actually, I was pretty happy with a 2-0 dull victory on the hour mark, weren't you?
Yeah, with Brentford coming up on the weekend, with the fact that we've got quite a few players away on AFCON duty, a really routine 2-0 boring victory would have done the job. We could have got through and not had to play another extra 30 minutes of football and tire the players out even more. So we could have done without that, to be honest. Great entertainment for the neutral, like you say, but we could have done with some extra minutes in the legs in terms of not being as tired at Brentford on Saturday, hopefully. And fingers crossed it hasn't affected how we approach that game or how that game plays out.
And just briefly, I just want to say Brandon Aguilera off the bench did absolutely fantastically, a brilliant cameo. It was exactly what we needed off the bench, because Hudson-Odoi, I don't want to come and slate him, but we want him to have confidence to take someone on and beat a man. But in Ilanga's absence, that's who you'd want. But Hudson-Odoi has never really done that. He did that against Blackpool in the second half with Tavares pushing him on, but Tavares sort of held back a bit in this game, and Hudson-Odoi wasn't the same player he was in that second half. So I thought Aguilera did fantastically coming on, and I'm sure we'll touch on Gibbs White's injury in the Friday five potentially, but he looks like a really good option going forward, whether he can contribute off the bench or from the start.
Okay, thank you very much. And as George just mentioned, we're going to be back in just a minute with the Friday Five, when we'll go over to Jamie at the 1865 news desk. 2024 is upon us, which means a packed schedule of FA Cup, AFCON, and of course, Premier League action. Beat the January Blues and watch every game with the atmosphere it deserves down at your local Green King Sports Pub. Don't settle for a dodgy stream. If it's on the telly, it's on at your local Green King venue across a huge HD screen. It's huge. If you download the Green King Sports app, you'll also receive 10% off every single drink whenever there's a game on, and you'll also be supporting us here at 1865, the Nottingham Forest podcast. If you're doing dry January, then Green King venues also offer a range of low and no alcohol options, so you don't have to settle for a worse sports watching experience.
You're listening to 1865, the Nottingham Forest podcast.
Hi, this is Jamie Martin from the 1865 News Desk. The headline of this week's news, to start it off, Nottingham Forest have been charged with a PSR breach. This week, the Premier League announced that Nottingham Forest were one of the two teams to be charged with breaching profitability and sustainability rules alongside Everton. After heavy spending last summer and a failure to sell Brennan Johnson before the date for final 22-23 season accounts, Nottingham Forest are in breach of financial spending rules according to the Premier League. Forest have responded with a brief statement in which they say they will find a speedy resolution for the charge. Nick DeMarco KC, a leading sports lawyer, will represent Forest in front of an independent commission, with Nottingham Forest arguing that they could not sell Brennan Johnson earlier due to the wishes of the player, alongside other factors to defend the club. Any form of penalty is expected to be shared in late April, with court hearings to be over by early April. And now some sad news. This week, Cheku Kiate has departed from AFCON following the passing of his father. Senegal and Nottingham Forest star Cheku Kiate has departed from his country's camp at the African Cup of Nations following the sudden passing of his father on Tuesday. Mr. Bangiogu Kiate passed away on February 16, 2024. His funeral took place at the Kar Yalar Mosque in Senegal's largest city, Dakar. The Senegalese Football Federation extended their heartfelt condolences to the family of Cheku Kiate and took no time in authorising his absence to attend his father's funeral. From all of us at the 1865 podcast, we would like to extend our thoughts to Cheku and his family at this time. In transfer news, Oro Mangala has been subject to new bids from France. Oro Mangala's future is up in the air as of the current time, with many reports coming in, with a new bid from Ligue 1 side Stade Rennais proving to add more competition in the race to secure the Belgian star's signature. Florian Plettenberg of Sky Sports Germany has been reporting exclusives on the future of Oro Mangala in recent times. Just last week, he was the first to report that both Napoli and Juventus had interest in the midfielder, but presented no bid as of yet, with Galatasaray, the other club, interested. Their initial bid was rejected and no further offer has been made as far as we know. The offer from Stade Rennais was that of a loan with obligation to buy the player based on certain objectives, with a future fee amounting to €25 million or £21.4 million. Evangelos Marinakis, Nottingham Forest owner, is understood to want more, but does like Oro Mangala and believes he is a quality player. More updates to follow. And Nottingham Forest head coach Nuno Espirito Santo has responded to the PSR charge facing his club recently. In his pre-Blackpool FA Cup replay press conference, Forest head coach Nuno answered questions from the press, with Forest's PSR charge front and centre of the questioning. In the recent presser, Nuno was asked about his thoughts on the charge, to which he replied, "We're all concerned in the club, but me as a coach, it's nothing I have to think or deal with. My job is clear. It is to prepare the team, and that's what we're focused on." A strong and focused reply from the Forest head coach, who doesn't quite shrug off the concerns about the charge, but urges calm and good mentality from his players ahead of future fixtures. And finally from this week's news, a Chris Wood winner edges Forest into the next round of the FA Cup. In a rather poor game at Bloomfield Road, in which finished 3-2, Nottingham Forest emerged victorious in extra time after unravelling a slowly composing Blackpool side, who themselves managed to equalise beforehand to make the score 2-2. Forest found themselves ahead early, with debutant Omobamideli scoring the first, Danilo putting Forest 2 ahead after, but Blackpool would pack their own punches with 2 goals to make the score level. Thankfully for the Reds, and once again, Chris Wood was the difference, netting another goal from a Ryan Yates pass, Forest 3, Blackpool 2. Furthermore, Neil Critchley, his players and the fans of Blackpool can be incredibly proud, looking a good side despite what their league ranking might say, a formidable opponent who in recent times has become somewhat of a bogey team for Forest. We can also tell you, thankfully, that the fan who fell ill is okay and managed to celebrate the winner with a smile, so some good news there also. So that is the latest from the 1865 News Desk. I'm Jamie Martin. Be sure to catch up with me on social media via @I'mJamieMartin on Twitter, or as it's now known, X. Updates on Nottingham Forest related news throughout the week. Have a fantastic week. We'll see you soon.
Thank you very much, Jamie. Now, obviously, we've already talked about the Blackpool win, and we also extend our condolences to Cheku Kiate and his nearest and dearest. The players made a big show of supporting the midfielder with the shirts that they held up when the goals went in and also at the end of the match. So that suggests, and Nuno did point out that Kiate is a key figure in the dressing room, you know, a senior player. Now, obviously, really, the big story is the profit sustainability rules, but we will come on to that in just a minute. What I do want to start off with, Stephen, is just the speculation about Arel Mangala. I think there's a consensus that he has been one of our best players this season. He has shown a level of aptitude and athleticism and ability, as well as other things beginning with A, no doubt, in the midfield. And he's kind of made the number six position his own. Would you be sorry to see him leave if we were able to double the money that we made for him?
It would be a shame, because it feels like it's only really been this season that we've been able to see the best of Arel Mangala. I think that's where he's really settled and has become used to being a Premier League footballer. And I think we're seeing the best of him because of that. However, it doesn't appear like he's really Nuno's kind of player. He hasn't featured as much since Nuno came in, so perhaps that does pave the way for him to move on. If we do double our money, I think that's good business, and tying in with what's going on at the moment with the breach of profit and sustainability rules, doubling your money on a player like Mangala is actually quite handy, and it could fund further transfer spending. So on that basis, I'd be disappointed, but also pragmatic about him moving on, because I think we could replace him.
George, £12 or £13 million profit could be enough to buy a goalkeeper who can catch.
Let's hope so, yeah. Well, Forest have found that difficult over recent years, so that'd be a bonus. But yeah,
catch and kick.
Yeah, true. There. Maybe we need double that, so maybe we need to find someone else to flog. But yeah, I think under Nuno, the number six position maybe isn't as prominent as it was under Cooper, with the sort of 4-2-3-1 as opposed to the 4-3-3. He likes sort of players like Yates and Sangare, who are sort of going to drive from midfield, as opposed to Mangala, who's maybe a bit more passive and likes to sort of tie things over. I think he likes his sort of bold midfield players. And yeah, it's been his best vein of form this season, but maybe that's, you know, a good time for Forest to cash in on him while maybe he's at his highest value, he's at a good age for clubs to poach him. And I think if he goes to somewhere like Italy, I think he'd suit their style of football. And Forest are very well stoked in midfield once Sangare and Kuyate make their way back. So yeah, it'd be a bad loss for Forest, but I'm sure they'll cope if that happens.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the silver lining, isn't it? Is Sangare's finding his feet. Hopefully, if he has a good tournament as well. Like you say, we've got Danilo, Yates, Kiyate, who can all play in that position. So it's basically four players for two positions. Dominguez can play there if we need him to as well. Although it has been nice to see Dominguez playing a little bit further forward and adding something. Dominguez is clearly... I think he's the nearest thing we've had as well to Samba in terms of his ability to try and rile up the opposition and indeed the referee. That's just a little tangent, but I thought it was worth mentioning. Stephen, let's move on to PSR and the PSR breach and the charges. Now, I would point out that you are in the company of greatness in that, you know, George appeared on ITV News, Maradona on the Midlands was on Talk Sports, I was on Five Live. As is so often the case, the media tend to be more interested when there's a bad news story going on, don't they? But how bad is this for Forest?
It doesn't look good, because this could mean that at the end of the season, we've got an asterisk next to our name in the table, and that's never normally associated with a good thing. So, yes, it is potentially damaging for the club. It all hinges on how severe the punishment is going to be. Forest have obviously said that they've been transparent with the Premier League throughout this process and for the last couple of months, particularly over the Brennan Johnson transfer to Tottenham. But yes, I'm concerned, because it feels avoidable. And don't get me wrong, we needed to sign the players we did when we got promoted because we did need a squad capable of competing. But I do worry that we've gone a little bit too far with it and brought in too much that we didn't need. And as a result, we've gone over. And I don't think it's a good look that we were relying on one transfer of Brennan Johnson to go through at a particular time in order to keep us compliant with these regulations. Because what if Johnson had got injured and Spurs or Brentford or whoever didn't want to sign him anymore? Well, we'd be in real trouble then. So it does concern me the way it's panned out. And I'm just hoping that our punishment isn't too severe.
Well, I mean, having an injured player doesn't necessarily stop a club from signing him. I mean, look at Forrest and Omar Richards. So anyway, George, I mean, the worry is, as Stephen said, that we're going to get to the end of the season and not know our fate, because as every possibility, the points deduction or the sanction, whatever it might be, won't have been decided yet. The safest thing to do is to make sure we finish at least 10 points ahead of the relegation zone, isn't it?
Yeah, but then they might give us a 12-point deduction. I mean, yeah, the thing is, it's clear that the rules are broken, and that says it all, that the Premier League in August are looking to change the FFP rules. So it's almost like Forest and Everton are being used as guinea pigs, really, and it's clear that it's not working. The Premier League have shown no real regard to Forest. We saw Richard Masters refer to us as small clubs, and in the statement, it was very, you know, Forest and Everton have announced that they had breached. Whereas I just Googled Man City's statement out of curiosity, and that was alleged breaches, allegedly have broken the rules. So there's a clear, distinct, very different tone towards clubs like Forest, should I say. But at the end of the day, Forest should have complied by the rules, and it's their own fault. They've had some expensive mistakes, like Stephen mentioned. You know, we look at Richards, Bianchen, Dennis, Froiler, Shelby, off the top of my head, who maybe not signing one or two of them would have made the difference in that sort of sense. But the club came out and said that they'd stuck by the rules, and, you know, it's all a very messy situation. So we don't know what's happening, but I think the rules need to change, because I don't think it's right that you can stick by the rules in the Championship, maybe have 2 good years of making a profit and then go for it one season. And then that means that in the Premier League, you can't maybe go for it. So I think that is where the rules need restructuring. But Forest have really only got themselves to blame because they know the rules and they didn't stick by them.
So for the purpose of clarity, I would point out that the Man City case is pretty different, because it all hinges on the fact that Man City's lawyers, rather, are hedging their bets on the idea that you cannot prove that we've broken any rules, whereas Forest and Everton have accepted the charge. And also, as we discussed in our discussion podcast at the weekend, Man City do have the small matter of the entire legal weight of one of the world's richest countries to call upon. It's a way more complex case, and therefore it'll take a lot longer. So I don't necessarily blame the FA or the Premier League or whoever it is in that respect. But Stephen, there's two sides to this, isn't there? So one, are the rules fit for purpose? But number two, Forest broke them.
Exactly. And we knew what the rules were when we came into the Premier League and before we started this season as well. The club sign up to it and agree to them before seasons begin. So we knew exactly what we were getting ourselves into. And it comes back to my point, if we were relying on a transfer to go through to keep us under these regulations and keep us in the black, if you like, then that is a concern, and it shows a lack of planning. And yes, the club might have said we're following all of the rules and the procedures and we're not breaching the sustainability and profitability limits, but clearly we have. So somewhere along the line, somebody's made a mistake, and we potentially could be paying the price for this, because if the points deduction, let's say we get one, is bigger than what we anticipated and it sends us down at the end of the season, well, it's done more damage to the club as a whole, because we won't be a Premier League team anymore.
And Stephen, just on that topic, I mean, is it the case then that, so obviously speculation is rife and we'll never really know the truth, because you just don't in these instances. But Nick Randall got sacked, Dane Murphy left the club. It's a different position, but George Syrianos was sacked and then came back. we've had directors of football, we've had sporting directors, we've had technical directors, we've had chairmen, we've had chief executives. Basically, everyone except for the big guy has come and gone behind the scenes. That's not going to have contributed to continuity and stability in terms of transfer policy. And you notice, just as we did at the weekend, I'm staying away from the word strategy. I'm using the word policy.
No, it doesn't create stability because you've got however many different people involved there in transfers and all having their say in all different areas of the club having an input on transfer strategy as well. It's been the owner, it's been the owner's son, it's been the head coach, it's been the director of football, the sporting director. So it doesn't point to a joined up way of thinking. And that's where you end up with a scattergun policy, which I think is what's happened. And yes, I agree we need to bring in a lot of players last season. And there's always a risk involved with any transfer. You can do all your homework. You can do all of the due diligence beforehand, but a player might simply not work at your club. But having a more stable policy behind the scenes gives you a greater chance of your transfers paying off. And I think we've fallen foul of not having that stability behind the scenes and created a mess where we've got a bloated squad, players who we might now struggle to move on, and we've breached spending limits as well. So all in all, that doesn't point to a very good way of things being run behind the scenes.
George, I used the analogy when I spoke to Chris Warburton on Five Live of saying it's a bit like getting a speeding ticket. You may not like the fact that it's a 30-mile-an-hour zone driving through that village, but if you're caught doing 35 on a speed gun, then you're probably going to get nobbled for it. If you're lucky, you might get a speed awareness course, but there's also the possibility of getting points on your licence and a hefty fine. Where do you think Forest fall on that spectrum?
I mean, it looks very likely that a points deduction will be coming our way because it's a definite breach of the rules. And yeah, I don't think you could hide the fact of that. I mean, it's not like, and I think they missed it by something like 12 million, was it? I might not be right about that, but that's not, you know, a small margin. And Forest clearly knew that they had broke the rules because they had this defence ready. So it's not like it's something that they didn't, like they knew they were doing it. So it's very hard for them not to be found guilty. And on the point before, I mean, the club really, from when I've been supporting, hasn't really been run fabulously. I've known Fowers and Marinakis, and I bitterly better under Marinakis, but I think the constant turmoil under him hasn't helped any of the situations. And obviously, I know Forest a lot more than many other clubs, but there's not many other clubs that you see so many names associated with the club. You know, you look at Brighton and the only one that comes to mind is Tony Bloom, things like that. Whereas Forest, you say Forest and there's Marinakis, his son, Wilson, and all these names that keep changing. And yeah, I don't think that's good. And it's not a surprise that something like this has happened, and it may have been brewing for a long while.
I'm just going to point out here, Stephen, that Brighton, just like Saturday's opponents, Brentford, they're an example of a club who actually do have a strategy.
They are. They're a stable club. They know what they are. They know how they want to run things. And I think it's been a big factor in their success. The way that they can bring players in, turn them into Premier League performers and sell them on for profit when the time comes. With Forest, I don't think there is that set strategy in place. I would argue, actually, the period that we did have a set strategy, which was Dane Murphy and Steve Cooper both in the club, was actually our most successful period under Marinakis. So what does that tell you? You know, it's this instability is nothing new. It was like that before Cooper came into the club and in those early years of the Marinakis regime. I just think they've got to look at this now and learn from it and try and create more stability at the club, because actually we've got a good manager now in Nuno, and it could be another good manager like him that ends up undermined by constant chopping and changing behind the scenes.
Managers don't usually last that long at Forest, do they? So anyway, I mean, I'm being blasé about it. And actually, what I would say is that I have no objection to Forest being charged if they've broken rules. Again, it's like that speeding analogy. If you've broken the rule, it's a binary thing. What about, George, your lookalike, Mr. Brennan Johnson? Forest, in effect, are going to argue that they were punished because they wanted to get more money, which is seems to make sense when the rules are called profit and sustainability.
Yeah, the fact that the rules don't have any leeway is going to be Forest's downfall, isn't it? Because they held out, so they got more profit in the whole sentence is profit. And yeah, their argument is also that Browning didn't want to leave. But at the end of the day, they've made more money for holding on to him for longer, yet are being punished for it. So that's where the rules need to include this bit of leeway where they don't allow, you know, it's strict, it's 3 years, bang on, there's a cutoff. And if we'd have sold him on the 1st of July, 1 minute past midnight, then we'd have still been in breach of the rules. So they need to include some leeway in the rules. And I think they're slowly learning because, like I said, they're going to change the rules. And it's no surprise to see that. I mean, Everton are about to be charged for something they've already been charged for already. And they're about to get 2 point deductions in the same season, if that is what it comes to, for two separate years of financial money. So I'm not sure how the rules are stipulated at the minute, but they're certainly not anything that's sustainable.
Mm. And Stephen, just to finish up on this topic, I mean, again, I think the fact that the rules are going to change, it's going to leave a bitter taste in the mouth. Maybe a bit for us, but definitely for Everton, because as George has pointed out, they're feeling like they've been double charged. Of course, Everton fans were keen to call corruption. Quite interesting that Forest fans generally have been quite resigned to it.
Yeah, and I look back at previous examples as well, going back a few years when Leicester got promoted to the Premier League. They were found to have breached FFP rules while they were in the Championship, and I think Bournemouth did the same and they got away with a fine. So it does make you wonder why points deductions now are suddenly fair, because teams have really benefited from breaching FFP in the past, and suddenly when Forest do it, it's when the points deductions are in place, and then next season those points deductions might not be there. So it's not fair on that basis. And also the fact that the cutoff point is June the 30th, I think, when you've still got 2 months of the transfer window left to run.
I should point out the clubs voted for that. So it's one of those things whereby, you know, have some of those clubs dug their own grave. And of course, the thing is, when you change the reporting period of anything to do with accounts, it creates anomalies. And it seems as though that's what's happened here. So we do need to finish it there. I just want to say thank you very much to Stephen and to George, and of course to producer Romeo. We will be back at the weekend. We're going to have a report on the Brentford game. Ivan Toney is going to be back for Brentford. Is he going to be fit? I really, really hope not. It's going to, you know, it's one of those things, isn't it? I think we all dread a match against Brentford. So let's see what happens there. We want to say thank you very much to you, listener, for joining us, as always. And as always, if you like what you hear, then please do spread the word. Share our podcast. All of our links are available at 1865.football. And if you are listening on a fruit-based device, we'd really appreciate it if you'd rate our show and maybe even leave us a nice review, because that will help other people to find our content. So all that leaves is for me, Rich Ferraro, to say thank you very much for listening on this Friday, the 19th of January. Have a great weekend and come on, you Reds.
Podcast Network.